We discussed the fact that there's a fundamental difference between Ochlin on the one hand and Kalim on the other hand. With regard to Ochlin, the Torah requires Hachana. The Echinuas Asher Yavir, the Parsha of Man. The concept of Hachana, the requirement of Hachana, is a given. It's the Sod of Mukta in Ochlin. Mukta in Ochlin, according to Rabbi Yehuda, means any ochel that doesn't have hachana. You need a positive, active hachana. According to Reb Shimon, hachana and muchan with regard to ochel doesn't require a positive hachana, but rather everything is assumed to be muchan because it's an ochel and it's roi lachkila, unless I do a haksa and I designate it, I push it aside from use on Shabbos. The classical case in which Reb Shimon is moda that I can push ochlin, something that's roi lachila, away from my use, and with that haktza, be mafkia, completely undermine the hachana, is the case of shemen. In the case of a ner shadolik b'shabbos, by pushing away, it's mutzal isur. I have now done a haktza, and even Reb Shimon would agree to that mukta. However, with regard to kelim, the Torah doesn't require ve'chinu as asher yivu. There's no source in the Torah for requiring hachan and kelim. Kelim are omdin l'shimush, and therefore they're not mukta. Indeed, the Gemara establishes that if I would take a beged and throw it into the ashpa before Shabbos, it would not be mukta. Not even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, who has the broader definition of mukta, would be moda that with regard to kelim, there is no mukta. The only possibility that we find in the shots with regard to mukta and kelim is the case of shivrei kelim that were thrown into the ashpa. Because even though shivrei kelim have some use, you could use it as a bottle cap, you might be able to use it as a support for the legs of your bed, but once you throw it into the ashpa, you have demonstrated that you have no use for these little pieces of shards of broken kelim. Says Rashi, Batal a Torah's kli. You're right. Kelim are fundamentally different than Ochlin. But the definition, the basic requirement in order to qualify as a kli is that it's omeg l'shimush. If it's not omeg l'shimush, you've taken it, you've thrown it in the ashpa, and you've indicated that you don't have any use for these small pieces of broken metal. You're not using it for this or for that or anything else. Then Rashi says, "Batal a Torah's kli." But yesterday we left, well, the day before yesterday, we left it with a question. Because we do have indeed looked to the kelim. In what case? In Melechet, in Mukta Mas Pamachmas Chisorin Kis. What does that mean? The Mishnah establishes, you'll see it if you have this Tosefis that I gave today, and we've seen this Mishnah in the past, Rabbi Yossi Omer called Kelim Nitolim Chutz Min HaMesra HaGodol V'Yosei Shemachresh. That means even after Chazru V'Hitiru, what they still left in its original state of Isur were these two Kelim of Meser HaGodol Yosei Shemachresh. Rashi explains that these are very sensitive Kelim, and he doesn't want to lose them. If they get misused, they'll dullen. They have to be sharp. And then Rashi adds that famous statement that we discussed many times: "Tahana kapit alayu miyachid lemakom v'lo chazu lemalach acheres." At the surface of it, when you read this Rashi, you get the impression that the same concept of haktsa that we find with regard to ochlin. For example, when I take grogos with tzimukim and I push them away by putting them on the roof, or in the case of chitim shazar makaka, where I plant the chitim in the ground, and the Gemara in Reish Lakish says that it's mukta according to Reb Shimon, is because of dechia biyadayim. And as we said over and over, Reb Shimon accepts mukta in the case of ochlin when there's a haktza, when there's a positive rejection, so to speak, in which I set it aside, it's not going to be used on Shabbos. And Rashi here on Kuf Chav Gimel, in the case of Mukta Machmas Chisor and Kis, seems to be applying a mirror image. The exact conceptual structure, namely Haktza V'Yadayim. Namely, what I do is I makpid on these kelim, I put them aside, I lock them under key, I put them under key and lock, and therefore I was makpid on them, I won't use them on Shabbos. But there's only one problem.
Rashi's talking about Kehilin.
Bishleiman Ochlin, we understand that Reb Shimon accepts mukzah in the case of Akhtov Yadayim. But in the case of Kehilin, we saw that if you take a kli and you throw it in the garbage, it's in your eyes, it's absolute rubbish. Eilecha dechia biyadayim gdola mizu, zarka mashpa. And yet, as the Rav says, because it's a kli, and there's no requirement of hachana, there is no mukta. The only possibility of mukta in kelim, as we saw in the case of shivrei kelim, is as Rashi formulates it, batla la Torah's kli. It's no longer a kli. If it's not a kli, it's eitzim avonim. Eitzim avonim is mukta to everyone on Shabbos. But in the case of mukta machmas nisar kis, for example, a meser agadol, a Yosei Chamach Reisha. These are classical Kalim. True, it's Kli Umnus, and has a very specific, specialized use, and therefore I put it away, but nevertheless, it's still a Kli. So this was very bonds. Yeah.
So could we maybe assume that if it has a specialized use, if it is mishandled or misused, will be damaged,
will be
and damaged. Therefore can't be used, and therefore it's not a Kli anymore.
But again, when you say can't be used, it can be used. It's not like shivrei kelim. You break a kli and smash it into smithereens. It's got small, teeny little particles. That's not usable. Again, you could use it b'shas adchak for something. But this kli was made for the purpose of the umnus. These are special kelim, and they remain special kelim.
So even the special kelim, even if they can't be used for the malacha.
Correct. Because again, when you say I can't use it, it's only that Shabbos tells me I can't use it. But the kli itself is a kli.
What if it got damaged?
That's shivrei kelim. Evan, what you just said is really conceptually good. That's shivrei kelim. Shivrei kelim is the code word for something that's physically damaged and is no longer fit for use.
Well, that's what I was trying to say. The assumption with Nachmas Yisroel Kis is that if it is mishandled or misused, it'll become shivrei kelim, and therefore. So for example,
if it's damaged and it's misused, I understand that it should be kept, but right now it's intact, it's in perfect shape.
But the chashash.
For example, I always give this example. If a sheretz would fall on Yosei Chamach Reish, on the Meser Agod, right? And there's a din that Caleb on the Kabbal Tumah. Again, you may need a hechsher, with one of the Shiva Mash, whatever the dinim are, right? We'll have to learn it with this Caleb, though. So would you tell me that because he puts it aside, and because he's mocked it on Shabbos, meaning, this is out of my realm of use on Shabbos because of the various malachs that would be involved in using this kelim, therefore, batalei Torah's kli, it would not be makabel tumah? So today I want to tell you a secret. I'm not sure if these kelim would be makabel tumah. And does anybody know in one word what object I have in mind? I'll give you a hint. But again, it's conceptual. It's a very large
ship.
And it goes on the sea, right? It sails the seven seas.
A ship.
Is a ship makabel tumah? Now watch this. In the times of Chazal, ships were made of wood. I don't know if that's true today. Any kli that's made of wood is called kli eitz. And there's an entire parasha in Sefer Vayikra about the tumah that the kli eitz are susceptible to tumas kelim. The Torah itself, going back to kli eitz, talks about sako beged. And the Gemara in Torah Shel Peh learns a lot from this case of sak. Sak is a sack. Similarity between Lashon Kodesh and Laz happens occasionally, and there are probably good reasons for it. You take this sack, you fill it up, and you carry it from place to place. That is your paradigm of a kli with regard to tumah. Now again, if I were to wake you up in the middle of the night and ask you, well, what use does a kli have? And you would probably spend hours and hours of time that you could use better to sleep in your bed, and list 1,001 tashmishim that I can do with a kli. But from the fact that at least in the parish of kli eitz of Kabbalah's tumah, sak becomes the paradigm of a kli eitz. That is your kelim for Kabbalah's tumah. What shimush can I now specify, can pinpoint, and tell you exactly what the Torah had in mind when it called this a kli? Is anybody following me? Again, I'm trying to sort of lead you in my direction.
Exactly.
In Hebrew, Rabosai, listen to what's going on here. Your definition of a kli is tiltal. Again, I'm not telling you that's your universal definition of kli, but at least as far as kli eats leaking couples tuma, tiltal is your paradigm. And the Gemara goes ahead and says that masak is metaltel b'mole uberekon. That means whether or not the sock is full, as it should be, because you want to bring things from place to place, or it's rekon, it's still metaltel. Please emphasize the extra U after the man, because that means reflexive. It can be moved, right? You can move the sock. And the Gemara says that that exactly defines what a kli eitz is as far as Kabbalah's tumah. A sfina is eino mitaltel. Again, if you got together all the strong people on the earth, or the Gemara gives the example when you have a sfina that's up on dry land, you know, before you push it into the water. So the Gemara says that you can attach the sfina to shvarim, you know, like I'm reminded of, you know, if you ever go on an archaeological tour of you know, around the Kotel, and they'll tell you how they move these stones to form the Kotel. You know, how many thousands upon thousands of people they needed. It's mind-boggling. So there is a possibility of carrying a sfina from place to place. But that's only, says the Gemara, when it's on dry land. If it's on the water, it's eino metaltel. We just don't have the way to do it. Again, maybe today it's a little different. Who knows? Maybe we can fly down gigantic helicopters, you know, these big air balloons, you know, and lift up the sphina, I don't know what. But in the meantime, take a look at the Gemara right here in Masechta Shabbos. And by the way, it's not coincidental that the laws of Kalim are found in two Masechtas. Number one, Masechta Kalim, which is one of the most complicated Masechtas in Shas. I dropped the Kalim as soon as I started it. It's 20 more prakim of Kalim. Again, you know, if you're into archaeology, it would be my first choice to recommend that you learn Masechta Kalim. It's a fabulous Masechta if you're into archaeology. Just to see the different types of Kalim they had at the time of the Mishnah. Very complicated Masechta. The Gaonim already wrote on Kalim and tried to figure out what they're saying. It's, you know, you'd have to live to 120 just to learn Kalim. But in any event, the second Masechta, if you want to get a little taste of Kalim, is Masechta Shabbos. And as my daughter always says, Ma Kesher, you know, that's the way the Israelis talk. You know, like, what's the connection over here? Well, why ain't Kalim and Masechta Shabbos? And the answer is very partial. Because much of Masechta Shabbos, and especially the laws of Muktzah, revolve around Kalim. And we need a paradigm, a prism through which we can define what a Kali is. So the Gemara tells us, based on the Mishnah, that a Sfina is Tahora, meaning there's no Kabbalah's Tuma. The Gemara says, and what's the Drasha teaching me? Right, the Drasha based on Shlomo Mel teaches me that a Sfina is like the Yam. The Yam itself, and this is based on Psukim again in the Torah, is not a Kabbalah Tuma. There's no Kabbalah's Tuma in the Yam. So too, there's no Kabbalah's Tuma in a Sfina. Why is there no Kabbalah's Tuma in a Sfina? The Gemara says, no, let us be Sak, because we learn it from the paradigm of Sak. Sak is a Kliates, and Sfina is a Kliates. Hukshal is Sak, Linyan Tuma. And what is it? So the Gemara says, Ma sak metaltil mole vereka, and I've called metaltil mole vereka. La fuki sfina de ena metaltelis mole vereka. Says Rashi, vahukshu lesak vizuei metaltelis maleka, malea de gdolahi. Now, Rabosai, I know what you're asking me. Rabbi Grossman, very nice. He gave us a nice little mini shear in Hilchus Kalim. But what's got to do with us? We're talking about a meser agadol. Again, it's a big meser, but it's not a gdola, sfina gdola that Rashi's talking about. You know, we can move a meser. It's not immovable. Or, for example, in the case of Yosef Shel Makresha, you know, the whole thing is about this size. You know, I don't even think it would be a problem for me to lift up the Yosef Shel Makresha. I mean, there are things that are very hard to lift, but I wouldn't put these two kalim into that category. So, what's it got to do, Elio?
You took one's a container and one is not a tool.
But why is it Eina Mitalta? You understand? My goal here is to convince you that the reason why Muktzah Machmas Kisarin Kis is Muktzah, even though it's a Kli, and we said you don't require Achonim in a Kli. El what Rashi says you're Muktzah it by locking it up. There is no Din of Haktzah in Kelim. Because the Din of Haktzah in Kelim is to make it into Muktzah, but there is no Muktzah in Kelim. The only thing that we have in Kelim is Hafkas Shein Kli. Avi, what do you say?
No, that a keli by definition is meant to be moved.
Exactly. And these kelim, which are called chisorin kis, are not movable. Why aren't they movable? Not because the physical weight, but because you locked it up. And now we go back to Rashi and we reread Rashi, and Rashi is saying something totally different than what we thought. Says Rashi, Dahanach, it's on the third line of the first source on your Tosefis page, as I call it. Dahanach kapid alayim. Okay, he's makpid, so what? Umiyached le'mokom. What is Rashi telling me, umiyached le'mokom? We thought Rashi was saying he's makpid. You know, he makes the declaration, this is not Shabbos thing. You know, like you say by, Shemin Adolim B'ner. You know, it's not Shabbos thing. You don't want to play around with the Shemin because maybe you'll extinguish the flame. That's not it. That's not what Rashi has in mind. If Rashi was learning Haktzah, then we're in deep trouble because we're talking about Kalim. Rashi's not talking about Haktzah at all. Rashi's telling us what?
Moped.
It's Eino Metaltil. Eino Metaltil, once you lock it up, it's not movable. And then it becomes like a Sfina with regard to the Tumas creates, that just like the case of the Sfina, it's Eino Metaltil. There it's Eino Metaltil. Why? Because of its weight. Here it's Eino Metaltil because you are Miyachid Leibokom. The whole loop shot.
Wait, Rebbe Berzin, how is that not Kusala?
How what?
How is that locking it up not Kusala?
No, again, that's something to do with Haktzah. Kursor Bosei Haktzah is the verb, the noun of which is Muktzah. There is no Muktzah in Kalim. So how can you tell me that a Kli Machmas Kisar Kis is Muktzah? It's a Kli. The answer is it's not a Kli. But why isn't it a Kli? It's not a Kli because he can't move. Once you do this act, which objectifies the fact that you don't want to move it from one place to the other, because once you move this Kli, you never know where it's going to lead to, and somebody is going to use or abuse this Kli, therefore, it becomes Ein Adol L'Sak.
Also, Rashi ends by saying, L'chazim v'malechet acheres, when you use L'chazim, is that also an indication of the second condition?
I would say the following, that if it was chazal u'bloch acheres, you know, if you could use it as a, you know, if you run out of forks on Shabbos at your table, you know, take out this pitchfork and use it, then Rashi says it is metaltil. How do I know it's absolutely a metaltil? It's like the Sfina, you take all the shvarim in the world, but you can't put them in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. The answer is it's a metaltil in the extreme, because it's a chazal u'bloch acheres. This guy is objectively very serious about locking this up. He's got only one possible use for it, and that use is totally unacceptable for the next 24 hours. So what does he do? Rashi says he locks it up. Yeah, but maybe he'll need a fork for his table. Rashi says, lo chazu u'bloch acheres. He will absolutely refuse to take it out.
Why do we need the Isser to move it then? If it can't be moved, what do we need the Isser on moving it?
There's no Isser on moving it, but once you've objectively defined, because you're the Bailim, you own this, that it won't be moved, it becomes like an objective Sfina. And it's an Eina Metaltil, Eina Dumi Vesak, and it's not a Kli. If it's not a Kli, then it's Usser. The Isser Tiltil is not Midini Mukta. It's like Shivrei Kalim. Just like in Shivrei Kalim, the Isser is not because of Mukta or Haktzah. It's just that once you throw it in the rubbish, it indicates that it has no use, and if it has no use, it's batali taras kli. Now we're adding another case of hafkashen kli, and the category that we're adding to hafkashen kli in this particular circumstance is the fact that it's ein metaltil. And that's miyachid le'makom in Rashi. My brother-in-law, Rabbi Eli Greenwald, just tell you the story, took a smicha b'chin at Yeshiva University. And in the smicha b'chinas in those days, they could ask you anything. You know, even though you required a certain, you know, corpus of knowledge that they would, you know, barrage you with questions on, but they could go even beyond that. So the Masvich in that time, there was a trio of Rabban, it was Rav Zipperstein. I don't know if you remember the old Shalom. So Rav Zipperstein asked my brother the following Shaila. Let's see if you guys can answer the Shaila. Okay? It's Chol Moed Pesach, and you run out of Kelim. Yeah, you just don't have any more Kelim. All the Chametz, all the Pesach Kelim are what? Are dirty, you know, like they're in the washing, they're being washed. And the Chametz Sticky Kalim are Chametz Sticky Kalim. So my brother-in-law says to him, Rebbe, what are you asking me? I mean, if he has no Kalim, he has no Kalim. You know, he can't keep his Chametz Sticky Kalim just because he has no Kalim. You know, we should have Sig Bobbin or something, you don't want to insult the guests. You know, he can't use Chametz Sticky Kalim. So Rav Zipperstein says to him, you have Chametz Sticky Kalim that are locked up, but you want to use them only for cold, not for hot. Right? So again, Chametz Sticky Kalim, you want to use it for cold, and you want to use it only temporarily. So what would you say, Rav Oso?
Well, what is the issue here? Can you use a tray for pot on a temporary basis if it's cold? The answer is yes. I wouldn't advise it, but that's not love.
But it's locked away, it's not clear.
Exactly. Rav Zipperstein wanted to see if my brother was sharp enough to ask the question, is there books on Chol Moed? On Yontif, it would have been awesome to do. Why? Because once you lock up a Chometz stick of Kli, it becomes Muktzah. It's the same Muktzah that we're talking about, Rav Oso. In other words, Rav Zipperstein fooled him into thinking that it was a Shaila Yoredeya. It wasn't a Yoredeya Shaila. It was an Arachayim Shaila. All right, we'll go on. Let's look at Mukta in Grover's Tzimuka. We have this list of Marmakomos here. It should say on the top, the Inyan Mukta, the Grover's Tzimuka. But also, I want to point out to you, if you haven't already seen it on your own, that Rashi has a definite approach to this case of Mother of Shimon, the Grover's Tzimuka. And the Rambam doesn't seem to reflect Rashi, but you have to read the Rambam carefully. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara Daf Mem Hei, Amar Shmuel, Ein Mutzel Rav Shimon El Grogos V'Tzimukim Bilvad. Says Rashi, not there, but on the next Talmud, El Grogos V'Tzimukim De'ika Tarte. The Dechina B'Yadayim V'Lo Chaz. Anybody here want to give me just a two-line summary, two-sentence summary of Rashi?
You've put it away.
Right. And
it is no longer usable for
anything. Okay, it's no longer usable. In what sense? Again, I don't want to use the word usable. Okay. It's no longer edible, correct? Lochazel lachila. Rashi doesn't add the word lachila, but we'll... So wait, let me just say how I would formulate this Rashi. I would say the following. To summarize this Rashi, there are two conditions that have to be met in order for Rabbi Shimon to agree that it's mukt. Condition number one is dachinu v'yadayim. He took these grapes and he put them on the roof. He pushed them away, so to speak. V'lo chazu, and they're not roi lachim. Correct? Now, for example, in the case of chitim shezara b'karka, as we'll soon see, there was a dachinu v'yadayim because he planted them on the ground, but it's still roi lachim. It's chazu. So it doesn't lack that condition. And therefore the Gemara is going to say that Chitim Shezar B'Karka is not Mukta. And the same thing would be true in Beitza Tachas Satar Nagoles. There was Dechiyah B'Yadayim, but it still is Royal Achim. Good. Now, let's look at the Gemara on Daf Mem Hei, Bo Minei Rabbi Shimon Bar Rebbe Mirebbe. Patzile go not to Memhei of the base, Patzile Tamra, the Rabbi Shimon Mahu. Okay, so let's focus on the word Mahu. What I mean to say is, what was the question all about? He was vacillating back and forth. So if you look in Rashi tells you, Tomorrow Manil Kotim Koder Bishulon. He plucks these dates off the tree prior, you know. Let's say while they're still immature, and before that time, prematurely, I think that's a good word, prematurely, the konsim also of the salim, and what's the purpose of the salim? There they become ripe. Good. So he basically wants to eat these things, but it's going to take a while. Okay? Because right now they're not what? They're not edible. So Rashi says, Mahu lechel mehem kodem bishulam. Now Rashi adds two words to the Gemara, and we can really applaud Rashi for adding these two words because it really clarifies the suffix of the Gemara. What does it mean, kodem bishulam?
Unripe.
They're not ripe, and therefore what?
They're not roi lachilo.
So again, he's not putting them away. There's no dechia biyadayim because, again, he's putting them in the salad in order that they should become ripe. But on the other hand, right now, entering into Shabbos, they're not ripe. And in that sense, it's like tzimukim, grogas, and tzimukim on the top of the roof. And the Gemara answers, no. Amar lo, ein mutzel, Reb Shimon, ela grogas, and tzimukim, bilvad, patzile, tamra, is lacking a condition that would engender mukta. Says Rashi. Rashi says the following, Elagrogos Vitzimukim Bilvad, it's the second source on your page, the Ikatarti, the Tachinu Biyadayim V'lochazu. Here, it's Lochazu. I'm sorry. Since it's Kodem Bishulam, it's not Royal Achil, it's Lochazu. But it's not Tachinu Biyadayim. So everything is crystal clear over here. In the case of Zroya, let me go over this. In the case of Chitim Shazar Lakarka, Bekarka, you have Tachinu Biyadayim, but the Chitim are still edible. In the case, and therefore you're lacking the condition of lo chazu. It is chazu. That's chitim shazar bekarka. So again, please keep in mind, if we had a chart here on the blackboard, we would say the following. Chitim shazar bekarka, you could check off the condition of techiyah biyadayim, but you X out the condition of what? Lo chazu lachil, because the chitim are in their perfect original condition. They're edible. In the case of patzili de tamra, what you have is a case where there was no techiyah biyadayim, but Einar Mispashlos Kodem Bishulam, Einar Bishulam, Einar Bishulos, and therefore they're not yet Royal Achil, but there was no Dechil B'Yadayim, and therefore there's no Mutz. What do we have in the case of Grogos V'Tzimukim? We have both conditions. Grogos V'Tzimukim, like Chitim Shazar Makarka, is Dechil B'Yadayim, and Grogos V'Tzimukim, like the case of Patzile de Tamra, has the condition of Einar Royal Achil. Because right now, in the present state, the Grogos V'Tzimukim are sruchos, they are not edim. And everything seems to fit in a beautiful pattern. So if Rashi were applying for acceptance into our kolel here, we would certainly accept. But then we have the Rambam. The Rambam gives us a little bit of a headache, and I might be even underestimating the problem. The Rambam opens up Halacha Yudalid in Perek Chavav, the Perek which is dedicated to Mukta, by telling us that shemen sheyotze mitachas hakora, so as you're, you know, going through the process in the Beis Abad of crushing your olives, what you have is a certain amount of juice, of we'll call it oil, that was squeezed before Shabbos, and this is basically dedicated or designated for what? If you have this big Beis Abad, now it's not everyone had their own backyard Beis Abad and produced their own oil. Who had a Beis Abad? Who had a Beis Abad? Only industrial people, commercial people, right? So basically what we're talking about in the case of shemen, sheyotze min hakora, is shemen that's perfectly roi lachilo, you can market it. But if you're going to market it, you're not going to use it for personal use. It's exactly like the case of Tamar de Iska. And indeed, the Rambam, I put it in small print, but you could read it. He says, so all this is, in a sense, out of my use to some extent, but I wasn't Dochi B'Yadayim, and it's a royal achila, it's perfectly edible. So the Rambam says it's no muk, so we pass it like Rav Shimon. These are all cases in which Rav Yehuda would argue with Rav Shimon, but we accept the sheet of Rav Shimon. Fine. Let's fast forward. The Rambam says, "She'ain shem ochel, ain't sham ochel shehu muktzah b'Shabbos klal." There is no ochel that's muktzah. Ela hakol muchanim. Good, that's Rav Shimon, and he's paraphrasing the words of Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon rejects muktzah. Chutz migrogos v'tzimukim. Now, if I cover the next line in the Rambam, and I anticipate what's coming around the bend based on Rashi, I would assume the Rambam is going to formulate a double reisa here. You know, the two things that are problematic in the case of grogus v'tzimukin. Number one, it was docha miyadayim, and number two, it's not royal achila. But let's read Rashi. Let's read the Rambam. The Rambam says the following. Shebizman shebiyabshimosam, during this period of time that they're drying up on the roof, hoel umasrichos bein tayim v'einam ru'uyim l'achila harehem asurim b'shabbos v'shum mukta. What explanation in the Rambam's formulation justifies mukta in the case of grogus v'tzimukim, which are ochlim? And the Rambam just told me that ochlim are mukhan. Exactly, it's Eder Royal Achila. But what does the Rambam completely omit? He admits the Chiyah B'Yadayim. He doesn't whisper a word about the Chiyah B'Yadayim. Rashi made this whole big deal about the Chiyah B'Yadayim to explain how Grogus V'Tzimukim is different than Patzile de Tamra. Patzile de Tamra, there was no Chiyah B'Yadayim. Patzile de Tamra is Eder Royal Achila. But there's no Chiyah B'Yadayim. And it's Eina Royal Achila because Rashi emphasizes Kodim Bishulam, they haven't ripened yet. But that's not enough to engender Mukta. What's the difference between Patsili the Tamra and Grogus Vitzimukim? Rashi tells me that Patsili the Tamra Lamaskonas Hasugya is not Mukta, it's Mutter. Why? Because there was no Aktsabi Adayim, and even though it's exactly identical with Grogus v'tzimukim as far as Eder Royal Achila is concerned, Eder Royal Achila, says Rashi, is not enough to create mukta. You need also Dechiyah V'Yadayim, and in the case of Patzila the Tam, there was no Dechiyah V'Yadayim, and that's why it's not mukta. The Rambam says the entire explanation for Grogus v'tzimukim being mukta is because it's what? It's Eder Royal Achila. The Rambam doesn't require another condition. It's stuff then in Patzila the Tamra. I don't understand why there shouldn't be mukta. For example, if we go back to the beginning of this halacha and we speak about shemen sheyotze mitachas hakoreh and all the other cases, there the Rambam is talking about cases where there's no dechiyah b'yadayim. Correct? I mean, that's why in those cases, Rabbi Yehuda's machmir, but we pass like Rabbi Shimon Lekula, there was no dechiyah b'yadayim. And it's not similar to chitim shazar l'karka, which according to Reish Lakish, when he asked the question of Yochanan, was mukta because chitin shazar makaka, he was makted biyadayim, he was dochet biyadayim. But in the case of shemin ayotzi mitachas habad, right, korah, in that case there is no dechiyah biyadayim. So there's no dechiyah biyadayim here. The entire Rambam, haperek chavav halach yidal, revolves around one issue and only one issue. Is it edible or is it not edible? Sotter Ramam Shemin Ayotzi Mitachas HaKorah is edible, and Tamarim Ushkeidim Amuchanim L'Schor is edible, and the Ramam says that Grover Sitzi Mukim is inedible and therefore it's Mukta. So if that be the case, then Chitim Shezor HaMakak, we understand, would not be Mukta. The half meaning was Dechiyah B'Yadayim, but according to Ramam, Dechiyah B'Yadayim is not a category here, it's not relevant. So the reason why Chitin Shazar Makak is not mukta, I understand very well, is because they're ruim lachila. Nothing changed in the Chitin. But if that be the case, what do I do with Patzili the Tamra? Patzili the Tamra, we said, Kodem Bishulon is Einaroy lachila. So if it's Einaroy lachila, it should be exactly equivalent to Grogus v'tzimukim. The Gemara indeed wants to compare them. Boy, mine Reb Shimon Berebi, mi Rebbe, Patzili the Tamra, Reb Shimon Mao, maybe because it's not Roy lachila, therefore it should be mukta. And the Gemara answers, Ein mukta, Reb Shimon el Grogus v'tzimukim b'lad. So Bishlan, according to Rashi, the answer the Gemara was that Grogus v'tzimukim has an additional condition, namely it was the Chiyah B'Yadayim. The Rambam doesn't operate with the category of the Chiyah B'Yadayim. According to the Rambam, everything reduces to, the whole question reduces to one issue. Is it Roy Lachila? Is it not Roy Lachila? Is Ribbono Shel Olam, the cash is better than the Teretz here? The equation, the analogy of the Gemara that underlies the question, namely that Patzili, the Tamar, is equal to and should have the same din as Grogus and Tzimukim, because in both cases it's Eder Royal Achila, that Havamin is a lot better than the Maskana, when the Gemara answers, no, Ein Muktzah of Shimon el Grogus and Tzimukim Milvad. How's the Rambam going to explain this? And before we give an answer, Mitch, you're on, I just want to point out to you that the Me'iri, I think, is even more explicit than the Rambam, because the Me'iri says, "Afilu psilei de tamrei, ratzalama tvarim anel katan kolim bishulon." And once again, he says that they're not similar to grogus b'tzimukim, but he doesn't mention a word. He doesn't breathe a word about the chiyuv b'yadayim.
It's nice that we're
calling. Does anybody have any water that I can just borrow? I forgot to bring myself water.
It's nice that we're calling it ein roi l'achila, but it appears to be very different. Degrees of it, because one is masriya and one isn't. The whole thing with the tamrei
excellent.
Is you can eat it.
Excellent. Who says this? Did you see it on your page? This is the Me'iri. Let's read the Me'iri inside. See, I deliberately read only the first line of Me'iri. But that doesn't my pedagogical skills that either work or don't work. Says the Me'iri, Afilu p'tzilei the tamrim anat mukta, why not? Tamar men el kotem kodem bishul. And again, he has the same two words as Rashi, kodem bishul, but look how he develops them. He says, Kotsim also b'klimis baso sham, muto lechol mihem. So now he's going to ask our question. Afal pi shalon is bashlu adayin, and therefore they should be exactly equivalent to what?
Gross.
To grogros v'tzimukim. Adayin lo nemar b'grogros v'tzimukim. The only reason we say that grogros v'tzimukim is book to the nation masrichos v'entayim. What line do we have to add now to finish the sentence of the Miri? Avo avo. Psile de tamre. It's not masrichos. So you see that according to the Miri, the reason for Patsile de tamre not being mukta is because it's not masrichos. You know, the only question I have is, well, if it's not masrichos, so what did the Gemara mean when it said, boy mine, Rabbi Shimon Barevi, Mirevi, Patsile de tamre, Rabbi Shimon Mahu? What's the mahu over here? What was the havamina? So Mitch, if we take your approach, we could say, well, it's not tasty. You know, this is not l'chatchila the best thing you would want to eat. L'chatchila, if I'm not stuck on a, you know, on a desert island and I have no food, you remember all the stories about the plane, the shipwrecks, and the people lived on who knows what, so I'll have to live on these Nebuchadnezzar, specifically the tamarind. So maybe since it's not roi l'chatchila b'nachas, that's not the way I really like to eat it, so therefore the Gemara has a habamina that maybe it should be equated to grogos v'tzimukim and it's ain't a roi l'chatchila. That's one way of going. I would suggest perhaps another way, just thinking out of the box. Maybe the habamina was that there's a dechia v'yadayim in the case of patzilu v'tamrei. Maybe what the Gemara is operating with is the premise that when he puts it into this sal, the sal functions in two different capacities. One is physical or biological, and the other is intellectual or conceptual. On a physical level, what he's doing is he's trying to get these dates to ripen, so he puts them in the sal. But at the same time, the sal now, for the time being, in this transitory period, serves as a makom, as a place, a location where he safeguards his tvarim, meaning he puts it aside. And he knows on Shabbos he's not going to take from these tvarim, because these tvarim are not yet perfect, they haven't yet ripened, and he's put them aside. That's called the dechiyah b'yadayim, meaning just like I take my grapes and I raise them up to the roof, and then the sun is going to be down on them, on the roof, and there's going to be a whole process in which the grapes are converted to raisins. So too, when I take these psili, the tamre, off the tree, and I know they're not ripe, I put them into salim, and what's going to happen by the process of, with the passage of time, in the salim, the dates will become ripened. So in both cases, I have a kind of dechiyah b'yadayim. And the Gemara answers, nay, that's not enough to engender mukta according to Rav Shimon. You also need lo chazu lo roi l'achila. And bishlam, in the case of grogos v'tzimukim, this sirachon, you really can't eat them at all during that middle stage when you put them up on the roof. Masha'ein ken, in the case of psilin de tamrei, again, it's not gishmak, but if need be, you can eat them. So again, the Gemara's Hafmina was operating with the premise that you can add to Ein Roi L'Achila the fact that there was the Chiyah B'Yadayim. And the Gemara answers, no, that it's not enough to check off the list of the Chiyah B'Yadayim. You also need Ein Roi L'Achila. And even though these are not L'Achila, this would not be my choice as far as eating them is concerned. But nevertheless, if I had to, and I was desperate, I'm in a mood for a date, and all I have is these Psili the Tamrei, I'll eat them. And certainly make a broth on them. You can make a broth on Psili the Tamrei.
And
speaking of brachos, in
the same way that the ein roi l'achila is different, the dechiya is different also, because putting it in the basket is not any different than putting it in an otsar or having it piled up. It's, you know, it's away, but it's not that far away that you can't use it.
So that's what I don't know, Mitch. I don't know the mitzvahs here. Well, I'm going to believe that and try to research this. I think that, you notice how Rashi tells you what the sal was made out of? Let's go back to Rashi's description. Yeah, Chosemi Lulav. Now, Rashi's not learning Hilchas Sukkis now, you know, Volkatan Lachem. So why does Rashi feel compelled to mention that the sal was made of Lulav? Again, I'm not a botanist here, and I'm not a farmer. I don't know. I have, just intuitively, I'd love to see someone who says this. I haven't found anyone yet. That maybe the sal also had some sort of, it was a contributing factor to the process of vision. Rash has to tell me, like, ideas here that are all totally irrelevant to me, that the sal was made of blue love. It's like kashik love, you know what I tell you?
It's not an enzyme that works. It's like putting up tomatoes in a truck with ethylene oxide, that makes the...
So is it possible that biologically this would speed up the process of if somebody could give me a printout from the
basically if one wants to ripen fruit, one puts it in a either in a basket, a closed basket, or in a paper sack and puts it in the sun, and that makes it ripen more quickly. So yes, it would.
I remember when I bought an Esser, you know, years ago, and the Esser was still green. There's a little bit of a shaila. I don't want you to get nervous here. But there is a little bit of a shaila in Allah about a green Esser. You know, an Esser should be yellow, certainly as far as Priyat Hadar is concerned. So they told me a whole gans of business, you know, how to wrap up my Esser, you know, for the week before Sukkot, you know.
Piece of apple.
Yeah, the apple, and put the apple in the honey, you know, the whole bit. In any event, what time is it? Oh, we have a few more minutes. So I wanted to ask you the following. Let's reverse back to Rashi for a moment. Rashi, as opposed to the Rambam, in the context of Rabbi Shimon's mother of Shimon, the Grogus and Tzibukim, Rashi requires the fulfillment of two conditions. Number one, Ein Roi L'Achila. Number two, Dechiya B'Yadayim. And as we said before, just to review, Chitim Shazar Bakarka is Roi L'Achila, but there was Dechiya B'Yadayim, it's not Mukta. And Patsili the Tamre, even though it's Ein Roi L'Achila, according to Rashi, there was no Dechiya B'Yadayim. We suggest that according to the Rambam, one condition is all that we need to engender Mukta, and that's Ein Roi L'Achila. And in the case of Patsili the Tamri, it is Roi L'Achila. Grogus Tzibukim, the Rambam says, it's Masrichos, it's Ein Roi L'Achila, that makes it Mukta. We racked our brains to try to figure out what was the Havanina that Patsile the Tamra might be Mukta according to Reb Shimon. And we said perhaps there was a Havanina that there is a kind of a Dechiya B'Yadayim in the case of Patsile the Tamra. But in Rashi's frame of reference, I don't understand. Let me emotionally convey my question the following way. I was always taught that 0 + 0 = 0. What does that mean? Now, the Derech HaLimud that I was trained in is that if you have two conditions, and neither of those conditions, independent of the other one, could generate the conclusion, what we call the halos, you know, the halachic effect, the impact, then no matter how many conditions you pile up, it's always 0 + 0 = 0. I remember when the Rav was discussing the sugya of Kinyanei Gzeila. I mean, we were learning about Kam, and the issue was that you need, for the Gazan to be Kona, you need two things. You need Yeush, that the Baal Rav Siyayish, the Nignav, is not going to get it back, and you need Shivi Rishus. The Gazan has to take it out of the Rishus and the Nignav. So I remember the Rav saying to us, you know, if each one of these conditions independently is not sufficient, then what happens when you add the two? And I remember he spent hours racking his brains trying to figure out how these two conditions mesh. And in conjunction, you know, they work together in unison to engender Kinyan Exhibit. So again, I'm just using that as a methodological paradigm. Here too, Rashi proposes the following thesis. In order to engender Mukta according to Reb Shimon, I need A + B. I need a royal achila and dechiyah b'yadayim. Right? Let's read the Rashi once more. Rashi says in the second source of the page, "Begrogus b'tziruku deika tarti dechinu b'yadayim v'lo chazan." I mean, if the chinu b'yadayim is not enough to make muktzah, then shed the muktzah haraya chitim shazok b'karika. If lo chazu alone is not enough to engender muktzah haraya patzile detare, so what happens in grogus and tzibukim? You have both these conditions. Okay, so in Yiddish we say noch erger. You know, it's even worse. You know, you pile up one bad thing on top of another thing. But still, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. You know, it does. You know, two zeros is still a zero. So what I'm begging to figure out here is how these two elements, X plus Y equals Z, for the Canadians here, and how do these two elements integrate to form one whole?
Just a thought, the idea of the Chiyuv Yadayim is the same as Lochaz, like we said before. There's a certain relationship.
I mean, there definitely is a relationship, but I'm afraid to say they're the same, because as we said, Patzil Tam has one of those two conditions, it's Ein Rohi, and Chitim Shazar Bekak has the other of those conditions, there was the Chiyuv Yadayim. So obviously these two conditions are different. I hope I'm not catching you on the word. I don't mean to...
There is an aspect of being one and the same.
How do you define that? You know, I want you to formulate that. I'm pushing you to...
I think it's more psychological.
That's a different Derek Halim. That's not for us, you know. I think there's a place here in the neighborhood where they do that kind of stuff. But not here.
It can give you like a medical syndrome. Medical syndrome, you say, you've got one criteria, that's not a good enough to call it this. Right. If you have two criteria, not if you have three criteria, now all of a sudden you've got the syndrome. What happened? Well, each one independently is not good enough.
When you say criteria, you mean like symptoms? Kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, three symptoms. Three different symptoms.
Each symptom independent of each other. No, that's not going to call it. Whether it be psychiatric diagnoses or medical syndrome.
So we have Aaron here on the psychology end. We have Mitch here on the medical end. We're doing great. I think we can rewrite the Torah here, right here in this room. We got all the scientists here that we need. He's been pushing for a while. But don't say it's Spanish. Yo, prendo la escuela de los años. But I don't understand the word in Spanish.
So maybe we're thinking of the wrong mathematical operation. So maybe, in fact, this is more like multiplying two negative integers that yields a positive integer.
I'm impressed, but I have to tell you, I didn't want to say a single word of what you said. So I thought you were going to say something I could understand, like 1/2 plus 1/2 equals 1.
So minus 1 times minus 1 equals plus 1.
That's pretty bizarre. Theory of relativity? I don't know.
Sounds
like quantum physics or something.
And in the case of the Grogos and Tzimukim, I was thinking that maybe it may not be Roy Lachila, but the definition of food I recall from Pesach is that a dog would eat it and just put aside. So
okay, you go to have it, but leave out the dog here. We got enough dogs in the neighborhood.
I missed the dog.
No, you started so great. Just finish it up. Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, where was I going?
There's a but over here. You know, there's Grogus and Tzimukim are not Roy Lachila, but what's the but here? Again, leave out the dog right now. Again, I know Aaron's heavy on, but it's Royal Achilles Kelly. You know, we still have to come back to your question from a month ago, right?
But it still at some point could be eaten.
I would even go even further than you. I would say it could be eaten even now.
Right. Okay.
If you were desperate. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. In other words, there's a Sirachon process.
Right.
But in order to engender Mukta in Achila, in Oakland, I have to go the full gamut from 0 to 100. The finish line is 0. It's not Royal Achila Klal. The Gemara thinks that Grogus and Tzimukim, despite the Sirachon, still has an element of edibility to it. It's still a bit edible. It's not Eino Royal Achila Klal. And in fact, that's why the Gemara compares Patzile de Tare to Grogus and Tzimukim in the Hav. I mean, just like Patzile de Tare, unripe dates, you got to be pretty desperate to eat them, but maybe, Kenzania, you have to eat them. So too, even in Grogus and Tzimukim,
there's a little bit of an entity here, call it, you know, like one percentage point, where you haven't crossed the threshold and you haven't, you know, ripped the ribbon, you're not at the finish line yet, because maybe we can eat it. And I think that's what you were saying, Michael, is what clinches us, what takes us over the finish line. What does the Chiyuv Yadayim tell me? It's mamish like the case of Shimrei Kalim that we discussed on Monday, that if you have little bits and shards from a broken piece of metal and you could possibly use it, you know, if you need a bottle cap and you're running out of little shards for bottle caps, give me a minute, because I'm hot on the trail here. Okay, sorry. Is that it, the clincher is that you took these little broken pieces of metal and you threw them out. The act of Dechiyah Yadayim, again in Kalim, keep in mind, obviously, we discussed many times, it means you're Mafkir the Shem Kli. That's not what we're doing in Ochel. We want to be Mafkir the Shem Ochel. Is it called an Ochel? Is it not? And Rashi says that the answer to the Gemara's question about Patsil the Tamre is that Grogers and Tzimukim has an additional element that carries us over the threshold. Namely, what? The Dichud Yadayim is the way that we objectify that Paka Shem Ochel, it's not edible. Why isn't it edible? Well, you may say, you know, I could eat it. So if you keep it around, so you realize if you get hungry, you know, you'll take it out of the closet, or maybe even take it out of the Sal Shalulavim in the case of Patsilu the Tavern. But once you take it and you lift it up on the roof, you've made a declaration, it's out of my orbit of access. And if that be the case, now I convert something that still has a little bit of royal achilo into something that's objectively ain't a royal achilo. The only problem I have with this, because I was so excited about this, except that Rashi changes the order here. That's what bothers me. I'm going to rewrite Rashi for a moment, which I'm not really doing, you understand? I'm just trying to convey a message. I would have said the following. De'ika tarte lo chazu v'dechiru b'yadai. Because the ikar comes first and the clinch of the tuffle comes second. If Rashi was on my wavelength, he should have told me that the reason why there's muktzah in the case of Grogus Vitzimukim is because lo chazu. Hello, what? It's not lo chazu legamre, lo chazu klal. So I need a clincher. It's dachid biyadayim. That objectifies the lo chazu and takes it from lo chazu berubo to lo chazu bekulo, from rov to kol. But instead, Rashi starts with dachid biyadayim, and that's going to force me bedocha to say the following. Again, it's docha gadol. That what Rashi means when he says dika tarti dachid biyadayim means dachid biyadayim shows and demonstrates that he's not interested in eating this. He put it away for a long process of bishul. And v'lo chazu, and not only that, but here he gets to the ikar. Should be it's difficult. I admit it's difficult. Yeah, Aaron.
To be clear here, I think we're saying the same thing, but I don't know if you're going to say that. But when Rashi says,
good, if I was to come to what you want to say, just when you said psychology, I'm a little nervous.
Makom dilo chazu melechus acharis.
Oh, you're back in Kufchav. Where are you in Kufchav Gimel?
Kufchav Gimel.
Oh my goodness. Okay, you're in Kalem. I have to like reorient myself. You know, I'm working so hard in Oakland.
As a the Dalin to me, I mean, I'm wrong. It's explaining what the three words you just said. Yachli Machom. And I'm trying to say that the Lo Chazi is not any different than the Chizmi and Dime in that
there's
case.
There's no vav in front of the
Dime. So again, you threw me off for a loop here. So if you want to talk about Kalim, we can talk about that after the Shia. I just want to summarize Oakland. And we, you know, the Rashi about Kalim we can talk about. So as far as Oakland is concerned, again, the bottom line is that Rashi requires two conditions. Rashi requires both Lo Chazu and the Chinuv Yadayim. I want to leave you with one thought question, and then you'll tell me if anybody wants to show up tomorrow and learn a little Kanaka. Rashi, in the case of Menhemet Beis, which is the last source on your page, which we won't get to today, we don't have time, and this is the sheet of Rebbe, and the Gemara analyzes Rebbe's sheet because Rebbe seems to be on Reb Shimon's wavelength, you know, he's in that radar screen, and yet somehow he agrees that in the case of Midbarios, these are animals that graze out in the far yonder, they actually only come back once a year or so, and the Gemara wants to say that according to Rebbe, that is mukta. And the Gemara tries to prove it from the fact that Rebbe agrees that on Yontif you can't shech the midbarios. So you got to hold this animal that's out there in the, you know, grazing in the Afer out there far away from town. And Rebbe says you can't shecht it. Why can't you shecht it? It's moot. So the Gemara says, Hani Nami. This is if you count it from the bottom of your page, three lines up from the bottom page, you might want to underline it. The Gemara equates midbarios with grogros vitzimukim. And this offhand is very difficult because Rashi says that you need two conditions. One, it's ain't a royal achilu. Okay, you could say it's ain't a royal achilu in the sense it's far away. But you also need dechiyah b'yadayim. Where was the dechiyah b'yadayim here? But guess what? In order to calm me down a little bit, Rashi, which is on the last line of your page, I'd like you to underline two words in that Rashi. Rashi says, didachinu b'yadayim. And get this, Rabos. Rashi doesn't whisper a word about a lo chazu. You know, whereas in the paradigm case of Muktzel, Reb Shimon, namely Grogos, Rashi says that the chinu b'yadayim v'lo chazu, when it gets to midbarios in Rebbe, Rashi says midbarios are muktzel according to Rebbe like Grogos v'tzimukim because of the chinu b'yadayim, and he doesn't whisper a word about lo chazu achila. And in truth, this animal is chazu achila because on Yontif I'm allowed to shecht an animal and eat its meat. Okay, we'll stop here. That was just an introduction to give you some food for thought for next year.
One idea. We probably hold that one of the conditions is to be a dying. Because of Lochazur.
What are we up to? We're up to the Rambam? Just I put my thinking cap on? Okay.
Going is one condition. Right? Going is one condition. He only needs Vasrikos. Doesn't need
Chivik. Correct.
And obviously, the kids are worse than speaking. It's because it wasn't Chivik a dying. You didn't push it away. You didn't show you want to use it. You put it where it belongs in order for it to get dry.
Right. But right now, it's inedible. So therefore, it's moot.
It's only because...
And that's what the Rambam points out here. The Rambam says very clearly. The Rambam says, Ho'il masrichos bein tayim. What does ho'il mean? Since, you know, to be asking me a question, why they moot? So, because they don't write lachila. And therefore, it's moot. The question is, what's the Rambam going to do with Patsili the Tara? We're going to have to say that Patsili the Tara is more royal lachila than... Think Rogers with Simon. Is there anyone here interested in Chanukah? I know you're not around tomorrow. Anybody?
Sure.
Yeah, just one, two, three,
four.
Four people. Okay, Billy Nader. I'll prepare something for Chanukah. So we'll have a kiyum of Chanukah. Okay, so probably be around 12 o'clock or 11:45. Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay.